Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Everybody, how's it going? This is Tyler Dunn here with Bob McGinn for another Packers podcast, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel at jsonline.com. Bob, what's happening today?
Thursday night at the Dunn household here, huh?
Yeah. Thanks for making the trip north.
Yeah.
How was it up there? Did you hit any deer on the way up?
No deer.
You had the close call
shooting
last time.
True. Shooting starts Saturday, right?
Is that when hunting starts around here?
Yeah.
Have you ever gotten into hunting yourself? You ever have time?
Small game, but no big game.
Small game, we'll be talking here. Pheasants?
Grouse, things like that.
Grouse, okay.
Squirrels? Woodcock.
What's a woodcock?
Kind of like a small grouse. Timberdoodle is another word for that.
Timberdoodle hunting.
Great, boy. It's good stuff. Wish I had more time for it.
Everything else going well?
Yeah, no complaints.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, the Packers are 5-5, so we're going to talk about that. We'll look back at their game in New York, look forward to their game this week against the Vikings. Pretty much a must win, right? They have to win this game.
I guess. Then they drop this one, they could turn around 9-7. Would that get them in?
See what happens in the NFC North, but wouldn't look good. I think if you lose to the Christian Ponder-led Vikings in general. All right, so then we'll get into your column on B.J. Raji, your story on Mike Daniels. We'll look at Scott Tolzien a little bit, and we'll get to some questions on Twitter. First things first, Bob, let's look back at that game in New York. If you can put your finger on it, what happened? It's kind of the same story for these guys.
Let's see what happened. I guess, you know, the defense gave a bunch of plays over the top, out of position. Four big plays. They did a good job against the run. I thought they were very competitive against the run after a couple bad outings. Offensively, Tolzien, as Mike McCarthy said, he threw the ball better deep than he's ever seen a quarterback of any of his ever do. 339, right?
Correct. I mean, did that surprise you when he said that on Monday?
I guess I had never really thought about it. But I guess after he said it, it was pretty... amazing, I guess. Accuracy deep, huh?
Yeah, it was. I mean, the game plan was obviously run the ball, set up the play action, get those one-on-one matchups, and he made the throws he had to make. I mean, what can you say? And I know that pick six is what got the headlines, but there's definitely a lot more to Tolzien's game that we could talk about.
We're standing out there at practice Friday during the probably 12 or 13 minutes we're allowed in, and... Tolzien was at the helm, and they were doing some stuff down the field, 11-on-11. And he threw a couple balls, Tyler, on those fades that he was completing that were probably 5 or 6 yards over the heads of receivers.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, but boy, apparently he must be a gamer because they were on the button.
That's something. I mean, he had the first throw he ever had as a Packer against Philadelphia was over a guy's head. Maybe he's got the nerves. It was a little pregame nerves. That was interesting. Something we can talk about later, but his quarterback's coach who played for the Bills, Rob Johnson, was telling me how when they worked out together, they could go 2-3 hours and you have two bad balls the whole workout. So he's an accurate guy, 24 or 34. But man, that interception return for a touchdown, that was the game. So
let me mention one more thing on Tolzien. I spoke with Brandon Jacobs, the running back for the Giants afterwards. And Jacobs, he interjects us. He says, well, I was with Scott last year in San Francisco.
Right.
And he says, I knew he'd play like this. He says, I told everybody here that he would play like that. He said, he's going to be a fine quarterback. Interesting.
Good perspective there. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, let's jump right into it, Bob. This team without Aaron Rodgers has lost three games. Now, you made the point that this team could remain competitive, that this team could stay in the hunt without Aaron Rodgers. You've seen this team without Rodgers. What say you, Bob?
Well, based on that schedule, when I looked at it, you know, when I wrote that column November 3rd, they had nine games left, and when they were 5-2. When I looked at that schedule, I didn't see much. It was either five or six teams with losing records and no dominant team. Probably the best team was Detroit. I mean, the schedule, they had faced all their tough teams, and had that schedule been flipped, I never would have suggested that they were, my guess was that they were going to be 11-5. So they've lost three games, you know, and obviously, I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot of intelligence to see how important Aaron Rodgers is and how the offense is different without him. And I would never underestimate the ability of Aaron Rodgers. That wasn't the point of the thing. The point was that I believed in McCarthy and what his staff could do without Rodgers. I also believed in Ted Thompson, the roster he had assembled. Despite the injuries and against that schedule, I saw him being successful. Mm-hmm. I still think the quarterbacking has been better than anticipated, better than I even thought it would be. And it's certainly among the top, those two guys, the way they've played, it's among the top third of backups in the league, I would think. So there's three games, all winnable. They were all in position. They weren't blown out. They certainly should have won one or two, and they could have won all three. Instead, they've won zero. Now, why have they won zero? The defense was hideous in those fourth quarter collapses in those first two games, the Bears and the Eagles. I mean, when you let a team run the ball, Tyler, with 9 minutes left, and they run off the clock all but in one game and then close in the other, anybody can stop a running game in a four-minute drill. I mean, you go with a 4-4 defense, you stack the box, you just get it done. Jacksonville can do that against Denver. I mean, you just do it. And Green Bay couldn't even do it. I mean, there's no courage, there's no pride, there was no heart. I'd never seen anything like it. Two games in a row. No, when I wrote the column, I didn't quite expect that. Also, when I wrote the column, in games 6 and 7, they hadn't allowed a 20-plus gain in either game. Packers hadn't done that in over 20 years. That had not happened. So, no, I didn't expect them to see 16 plays of 20 yards or more in the last three games. So the defense has collapsed. The defense has played poorly. The defense hasn't stepped up. And this goes to Mike McCarthy. I mean, he hired all these people, and he has saluted his staff as the best in the National Football League. And it's his job in times of turmoil like this. You've got to get players to do the extra. You have to galvanize into a force, an emotional fighting force. And really, the team in many ways has gone just the opposite direction.
Boy, I think at the core of this whole situation is just, as you mentioned, the defense kind of not being what we thought they were. And doesn't that go back to the four-game winning streak when the Lions don't have Calvin Johnson? The Baltimore Ravens, I guess they're not as good as we thought they were, and that offensive line is just a mess. Brandon Weeden is the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. Christian Ponder is the quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings. You know, the defense looked really good for that stretch. They looked good before that stretch, too. But do you think that maybe we all thought that they were a little better than they actually were?
You know, injuries have hammered into that unit. There's no question. I mean, you lose Clay Matthews, that's a problem. Perry was starting to come along. You know, Hayward hasn't played. I just kind of look at, you make good points on all those games. And when you put it together like that, that's excellent. I just think in my own mind, when I watch these games and I watch these tapes, I establish a standard of performance, you know. Mm-hmm. And I saw this defense performing pretty darn well. I saw it more physical. I saw hustle away from the ball, the signs of a motivated group. I saw that more than last year, more than the year before. And I was seeing a return to 20-10. So despite some poor opposition, I still think the level of play from Green Bay was pretty darn high.
Yeah, you
know, seven games.
I'll agree with you. I thought that they did seem pretty solid. And they weren't forcing the turnovers like they had in the years past, but they were getting teams off the field. They're playing tough, physical. They were closing on guys. But I can never get off the point that if you take Aaron Rodgers off this team, warts are going to be exposed. Problems are going to be exposed. 2011, They're giving up 350 passing yards a game. Turnovers were bailing out the defense. Even last year, I think it was by and large an okay, solid defense, but Aaron Rodgers covered them up many times. We haven't really seen this team without him, so we don't really know what it would look like, what it would resemble. That's why I kind of just disagreed, I guess, with the point that I just can't see them contending for the playoffs without the guy for a long period of time.
There's no question, I mean, how valuable he is. I saw him at 5-2 against a bad schedule. The least I figured that they could get to 9 victories
right
against that schedule, which would put him in the hunt. And 10 or 11 was certainly within reason, again, with that schedule, with that coaching staff, and with the ability of those two backup QBs.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's
not to win a Super Bowl, Tyler. I mean, not to go on the road and beat right Cincinnati or San Francisco. No, you can't do that with Wallace or Tolzien in any big game or any playoff situation. Absolutely not. But to sneak in, yes.
You know, if you look around the league, there's probably a handful of teams that are just incredibly reliant on the quarterback, and that's just the way they're constructed. They pay that player top dollar, those $100 million deals that we see, and that if you take that player off the field, what do you have? I mean, isn't New Orleans one of those teams? Denver, I guess we don't really know. New England, Detroit. I think there's a lot of teams that would be in this exact same situation, this predicament, and that it's every coach, every GM's fear. They made a good point. They had to have this contingency plan. They had to have a plan for life without Aaron Rodgers, but it's not a plan that anybody in Green Bay wants to live.
It's professional football. You make it work. You got a staff with that much continuity and a GM who's been around 9 or 10 years, you make it work. It's professional football. You've got to. There's no passes in this business. You know, Ty? You sneak and you battle. And if you work longer hours, you get it done. And if your fans at Lambeau Field, you do something that the fans have to even assist a team in these moments. These two defensive collapses occurred at Lambeau Field, for heaven's sakes. That's just the way the game's played. And stuff happens, man. And nobody gets a pass. There's no excuses.
Right.
McCarthy has said that he's got the best coaching staff in the National Football League. Well, this is where you define a career and you define a staff, and it's not happening.
And also, let's remember Mike McCarthy before this past New York game, Philadelphia game. Right, the Philadelphia game, I believe. He said, look, I've talked to Aaron Rodgers about this, but frankly, in so many words, said, we need to prove we can win without him. We need to show that we're a good team, that we can win without Aaron Rodgers. I think that they took a point of pride, and they wanted to go out and prove that they can win without an MVP quarterback. It hasn't happened. So they're still in the hunt, though, Bob. They're a game out. That's what kind of TJ Lang said today. Look, it's this hole that they've dug for themselves, it could be a heck of a lot deeper. They're one game out, and obviously their prospects, their playoff hopes, their season, everything is kind of dependent on when Aaron Rodgers is going to return from this broken collarbone. He's spoken a few times this week, most recently in the locker room, and you listen to every time he's spoken about this collarbone injury, he says, there's nothing I can do. It's not like a broken finger. It's not something I can play through. The bone needs time to heal. I'm going to come back when I'm ready. So everybody that's kind of circling that Lions game on their calendar, I mean, the gut feeling that I have, and I'd like to hear your opinion too, is he's not going to be back by then. I mean, this is something that's going to take a little time. I mean, the guy broke his collarbone just a couple weeks ago.
November 4. This is a broken collarbone, right?
It is.
He's not playing in Detroit. I don't even know if he's playing against Atlanta. His career, you put a guy out there prematurely, and his body carriage is different. He's leaning in things differently. He could be susceptible to other injuries.
Right.
You know how you compensate for one part of your body that's not whole. He's going to be, if he's a 15-year starter, this is sixth year as a starter. I mean, he could be a starter till age, what, 39? He could.
Mm-hmm.
He's healthy and he's committed. He wants to play. This year will be forgotten. The Packers have to look long-term on this, too. Have to.
Right.
You can't go rushing a guy out there.
And I mean, if he does rush out there and re-injures it, season's definitely over, and you're looking at a multiple months long rehab after that. So you really have to weigh it all out. And it just comes back to your point that they just have to win a game without Aaron Rodgers. I mean, the urgency right now is at an all-time high in that locker room. No players are really speaking up. No players-only meetings. Nothing, you know, no one-liner headline banners that you see everywhere. This team realizes they have to go out, they have to shut up, they have to win a game.
So I understand there's a sense of urgency in that locker room right now, right? I'm sure there was the last 3 weeks or the last 2 weeks, too, that when they knew Rodgers was out. You know, there's probably also some self-pity in that room and some guys who maybe they're accepting defeat. That goes on in any walk of life, any bunch of people like that, over 50 guys. Certainly haven't been given it the old college try recently, have they?
Yeah, I mean, it's,
they're 0-3 against the spread in those three games, too.
It's one thing to say something, it's another thing to do it. And I think that's why James Jones said, we just have to play. The time for talking is over.
All right, so Ty, let's talk about the Giant game, and on defense, the big plays. There were four of them, four gains over 20 yards, 25 yards, I believe. And Mr. Dom Capers talked about some of that on Monday. You want to break some of those down?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always important to hear from the coordinators, and Dom Capers really does a good job of kind of breaking these things down. And I think that when you look at the plays one by one, detailed, it kind of sheds a little light on the bigger problems and the fans that just want Dom Capers' head, want him fired, want a coach fired, want accountability, want this, want that. Here's what happened against the Giants anyways. All right, so on Hakeem Nicks's 35-yard reception, where it's just, it was wide open, yet there were two guys in the area. But when you look at it, it was a switch route where him and Victor Cruz kind of switched lanes, and Tremont Williams and Morgan Burnett just both went to Cruz. I mean, they didn't communicate. They didn't talk before that play and figure out who has who. That was a 35-yard game. On a 3rd and 5 inside the 10, this isn't one of the big plays you talked about, but it's another switch route the Capers brought up. Brandon Myers gets open for 8 yards underneath. Huge play, was wide open. Well, they shifted, or they motioned Victor Cruz over to the left side. Green Bay gets all confused. They don't know who has who. And Myers gets open underneath MD Jennings on that play. On the touchdown, Reuben Randall's 26-yarder. Micah Hyde, who had a rough day in the slot. There'll be more on him in the paper on Thursday in our colleague's Tom's story. He wrote about the secondary length. But yeah, Micah Hyde, just, he turns one way thinking he's in zone when he's supposed to stick with Randall, and man, gets open for a touchdown. Victor Cruz in the slot. You're wondering, how in the heck is Clay Matthews covering Victor Cruz? Well, they blitzed. Capers said it's part of the defense. You have Matthews there, but you also hope to have some help over the top with Burnett. That necessarily wasn't there either. So one by one, systematically, the Giants kind of broke down Green Bay. And I don't know. I mean, I can understand the argument that, well, maybe it is on the coaches because these players should have been better prepared to handle this. I mean, Victor Cruz said after the game himself that we saw things in their coverages on specific down and distances that we could take advantage of. But these examples here, to me, just seem like player error, that you just can't have these mistakes in the NFL. What do you think, Bob?
Oh, I agree. People say, you know, what's wrong with the defense? It's just, collectively, individuals are breaking down. Mm-hmm. Guys just not playing as well with some injuries. Ryan Pickett's knee, he's not as stout at the point right now. Matthews, he really can't play with his hand thing. He's a shell of himself, you know. Hayward's gone in the slot. He did a good job against Cruz last year in that game in November that they lost.
How
he played well.
And how well was Nick Perry playing before his injuries?
He was coming on to an extent, no question. So there's that, and then there's just the inferior performance here, there, and everywhere, and you add it up. So in those two games, game five and game six and game seven, Cleveland and Minnesota, they never allowed a 20-plus play. And now, was 12 in the secondary back then? Let's see, I don't know. That's that influence, I guess.
Damn you, Bob.
All right, so where do you want to go now, Ty?
Well, I mean, defensively, I mean, you had a couple stories this past week up front. Mike Daniels is having himself a solid season. And then I thought it was really interesting on B.J. Raji. And you had a source tell you that he was offered $8 million a year and that he turned it down. You talked to BJ Raji about this.
Well, he won't talk about any money, you know. Some people think the $8 million is too high. I don't. It's the going price. I mean, this is a durable, quick, strong, committed player. That's what these big guys make, and he's a good football player. He's not a great one, but he's a good one, and they're hard to find. And if he wasn't here, fans would realize how much they'd be missing. Mm-hmm. This guy, he's hard to move, and even though he's probably number four on their inside pass rush list right now, he can still rush inside. He's proven that over the years. So, you know, it's the Packers want him, and now he has to make a decision. He's playing only 56% of the downs right now. He played as much as 85% in 2010, his best year. So, if you know, he's attractive for both 4-3 teams and 3-4 teams. Some could even think he'd be a 3 technique in a 4-3. So if he stays here, and I assume the Green Bay McCarthy wants to stay with a 3-4, he knows his role, and you got Dayton Jones and Daniels who are going to be those sub-interior rushers. We see that. Sure as heck, that's the way that's going to be. Raji knows it. So does he take UFA for what it was designed to do? Give a player who's a backup or a player who's stuck in a role he doesn't like a chance to switch teams? He may do it. What would his market be like? Hard to say. You never know. You never know. It's a pretty good group of DTs going out there, too. So he and David Dunn, his agent, are going to have to play this thing. Packers could come with a franchise tag. Should be around 8.5, something like that. But all of that counts on the cap immediately. So that's not real good for the team.
Yeah, I mean, you can't ever fault a guy for wanting the test free agency. I mean, how many opportunities do you get at this as a professional athlete to see what you're worth and to maximize that value? So he does have a little bit of leverage in that sense where he knows where the Packers stand. Okay, after the season, maybe a team will give him more. I thought probably the most illuminating part of that story, and it's the same exact vibe I got doing that story on him earlier in the season when he talked about kind of accepting a lesser role, not being out there on those nickel situations, is his maturity, you know, that maybe he wouldn't have accepted that kind of a role back in 2010, 2011, and his numbers are down, way down, because he's not out there in those opportunities to just kind of rush upfield. But I think that it's pretty genuine. I mean, the sense I got from it, it's pretty sincere that he has accepted his value to the team, his role, and he's been a good soldier. And Mike Turgovic kind of says the same thing. Pretty sincere to you as well,
I imagine. I agree with you, Ty. I remember reading your story. I read Tom's story on the eve of the season, right. Tom Silverstein. And I think it's all consistent. BJ admitted that maybe a year or two ago he would have been a bit of a cancer because he had concerns about his role. I think he and Turgovic have been around and around on this. But I think now he knows, as he said, Dom Capers is out there for one thing, that's to win. And he's not guaranteeing him any sacks. And, hey, he sees how good Daniels is rushing the passer. And Jones has come around, too, a little bit. So,
but if he's only playing 56% of the snaps, is he worth $8 million a year, Bob? I mean, with all these other free agents that they have down the pipe, that's a lot of money for this team that just paid Aaron Rodgers and Clay Matthews a lot of money.
If Daniels gets hurt or Jones gets hurt, he's immediately playing a lot more.
You know? That's true.
So he's a number three interior rusher. I don't know, Ty. If you can't stop the interior run, you're doomed. You just got to get that done. And I don't know. I don't think it's money ill spent. I really don't.
I agree. And after watching this season kind of progress and the makeup of it, I think you'd be more inclined to value a BJ Raji over maybe even a Sam Shields. It's really interesting to see where they stand on Shields now.
Yeah, the cornerback market has not been high in the last year or two. D-line market's been higher. I have no idea what the UFA class is going to look like at cornerback. The Packers have pretty good depth at both positions, really. Mm-hmm. They got two other wide bodies, Jolly and Pickett. I suppose Josh Boyd could add another 10 or 15 and be a 325-er. He could maybe get in that range. C.J. Wilson's another, 305-er. Cornerback, I don't know. We'll have to see about that Shields thing.
Were you ever a 305er, Bob? Hope you never called me a 305er.
Yeah. Wow.
All right, let's move on. Mike Daniels, you also had a story on him. What kind of season is he having, if you can put that in perspective here?
Outstanding, huh? I mean, you've written about him. We've all written about him. Tom did a great story on him a couple months ago. He's kind of a fun guy to talk to, and he's a fun guy to watch play.
Yeah.
Who made that comment? Somebody... Turgovac said that when he was reading his report to Ted before the draft, a month or two before the draft, in their draft meetings, Ted very seldom makes any comments, doesn't want to tip his hand when he's listening to scouts and coaches read reports. But Turgovac concluded his report, he said, by saying, "This is a really fun guy to watch." And he said, Ted then interjected, "I agree." That's probably why they drafted him, right? Yeah, they were in unanimous agreement on him. Daniels, again, he had another big game against David Deal. Deal's a 6'5 and a half inch guard, one of the taller guards in the league. And Daniels at 6'0 and a half just kept getting under him and walking him back. This happened four or five times. What, he had 3.5 pressures? I think he just played well.
Who's the last guy on the defensive line here that was just an absolute pain in the ass to play against? Isn't that what he is? Just a pesk.
Colin Jenkins. He had a spin move. Colin was fast and strong. And B.J. Raji in 2010, you didn't want to play against him either.
Right. But Mike Daniels.
That's why they won the Super Bowl, Tyler.
Coming in this role, though, I think that he will be valuable. He's somebody that they're going to have to pay down the line here, too.
Oh, no question. Huge, huge money, yep.
Hmm. All right, Bob. Well, do you want to take a look at the Vikings, or do you want to get into something else here?
We could talk Vikings, huh?
All right.
How are the Vikings doing, Ty?
The 2-8, and they're all sticking right with Christian Ponder.
So they were 3-13 in 2011. Last year they were 10-6, made the playoffs, and now they're, geez, up and down, huh? It's unreal. All right, so they're going with Ponder. Is that a wise decision?
Well, the way Leslie Frazier kind of rationalized it today to the media out there, and give Leslie Frazier credit for not tipping his hand when he talked to the reporters in Wisconsin before the reporters out there a half hour later, named Christian Ponder the starter and said basically it's because he has experience playing the Packers. He said he's had success playing the Packers. And then he had to kind of catch himself. He said, well, Christian Ponder, he's had success playing up there at Lambeau. He's played at Lambeau Field a few times, so he hasn't necessarily had great games in Green Bay, but he's at least played the Packers. He's familiar with what they do, so that's the thinking there. Another rough game for him against Seattle. Turnovers really cost the Vikings. And gosh, I mean, we got to talk to Adrian Peterson on the conference call as well today, and just he doesn't sound defeated when he absolutely could. I mean, look at the quarterbacks he's had there. He had the year with Brett Favre when Favre played really well, but Kelly Holcomb, Brooks Bollinger, Tavares Jackson, Christian Ponder, Matt Cassel. I mean, yeah, Eddie Lacy's seen guys in the box here these few weeks. This is something Adrian Peterson's been seeing his whole 7-year career.
Yeah, they just can't get the thing settled, can they? When was their last? They drafted Tommy Kramer in the late 70s, mid-70s. And he was a good starter for 7-8 years. But, boy, since then it's just been veterans, Cunningham, and different players coming in and out.
Kind of puts it into perspective, doesn't it, when, you know, the Packers season seems to be in a tailspin at quarterback. These last 2-3 weeks, this is something they've been dealing with for decades, that's really. Right.
So Ponder, I think he gives them a better chance to win than those other two guys, I would think. I mean, he can run around, and I don't know. What about Peterson's groin? Talked to somebody who looked closely at that Seattle game, and they think he's hurting to an extent. Didn't practice today. I assume he plays. He had 21 carries the other day, but again, he was taken out in the fourth quarter, and Gerhardt played, so they can't win without Peterson really being in top form. What else? We don't know about Greg Jennings. He's got an Achilles thing. He missed another day of practice. That's a bit of a concern.
Yeah.
Jerome Simpson, he's on the field right now, but he had a DUI here, I think, November 9, so he could get suspended at some point. Cordarrelle Patterson is playing more and more. He's an amazing kickoff returner. Wow, he was good against Seattle 2 or 3 times. He almost broke. He's really something else.
I'm just glad that we got a Tamarik Vanover reference out of you when you wrote about his kick return ability.
Another big guy, huh, Ty?
Yeah. Another,
remember T-Man?
Oh, yeah. Mid-90s there for the Chiefs. You were a youngin'. Yes, yes. Pre-Dante Hall there.
All right, Jarius Wright. He had two touchdowns against the Seahawks. Remember he closed kind of fast late last year?
Right.
Hurt the Packers?
Finished well. Yeah, finished
strong.
He hasn't
done much behind Jennings, but he got a chance to play and he produced. So Jennings, you know, according to stats, he has dropped four balls. The other six top wideouts and tight ends have dropped three. They have seven total, and he's dropped four. His drop percentage is, I haven't hardly seen him play other, maybe twice, so I have no idea. But his, you know, he just hasn't made an early return. Guy's not playing well, and now he's not producing well anyway with quarterback situation. All right, the offensive line. John Sullivan, the center's got a concussion. He's not having a good year. Joe Berger from Michigan Tech, Tyler. Michigan Tech. He is the Upers' only representative right now, the Up in the National Football League.
Is that right?
From Newaygo, Michigan, which is downstate.
Okay. They have, I was going to say they have football up there in the UP still?
They Michigan Tech administrators tried to close it down.
They did.
They shut down the program for about a month, 8 years ago, 9 years ago. What? And they brought it back, the Huskies.
Good thing.
Not all hockey up there, Ty. Up in Houghton. So Berger would be the starting center. Phil Lodeholt. Man, he was bad early against the Seahawks. He's not having a good year. Right guard, Brandon Fusco. Left guard, Charlie Johnson. And Matt Khalil is the left tackle. So that's their offense. Kyle Rudolph, their best receiver, out with a broken foot. So you got John Carlson. He had a decent game against Seattle, but so that's the O. How many points are they going to be worth against this D? Who knows?
Boy, I agree, though, that process of elimination at quarterback, Christian Ponder's probably your best bet. I mean, unless you're the Vikings and you really do just want to view this season as a quarterback audition and see what you have in Josh Freeman, something, anything. But they know more than we know. I mean, they've seen Josh Freeman. Maybe the guy is just completely crumbled at this point in the year, and it's not even worth giving him a shot.
You know, they hate the Packers, obviously, and the Packers hate them. They're not going to mail this game in.
No.
It makes sense.
It does. It does.
Next week they host the Bears. They don't want to mail that one in either. So maybe Ponders goes. Then you're at Baltimore. Okay, then you go with Freeman. You host Philly. You could do that one. At Cincy, maybe you could play with him. And then the finale at the Metrodome against the Lions on December 29th.
And then they're tearing that thing down.
Yeah.
Fondest Metrodome memory, real quick, Bob, even though they're not playing there this weekend. I guess
you can't. Just the TJ Rubley craziness and the Terrell Buckley, you know, bad play. I mean, I guess those are both negative memories, but they they do stand out. And then certainly I remember covering that NFC title game when Atlanta stunned the Vikings.
Right.
That's one of the greatest, most shocking games that I've ever covered. Mm-hmm. Man, it was loud that day, Tyler.
Boy, it has to be one of the best teams that never made the Super Bowl right there.
Probably so.
All right, defensively.
All right, the Vikings.
Whip through it here.
They got a D-line. They can rush the passer. You got Brian Robeson, who's now considered to be their best pass rusher. Statistically and anecdotally, he's pretty darn good. He's going against Barkley, or Marshall Newhouse.
We'll find out.
We don't know. Jared Allen, he doesn't like the Packers, and he's going to bring it. He's not what he was. He's still a threat, if you ask me. Fred Evans, a nose tackle. I can't tell you. He dominated the Seattle Pro Bowl center, Max Unger. He anticipates the snap. He was doing that. You've got to have a hard count against this guy because he gets so fast off the ball. And Fred Evans was driving penetration. They stopped Marshawn Lynch, and largely because of Evans and playing eight-man fronts. They got after Marshawn Lynch. They really did.
That's interesting because, boy, when I think back at the Packers game there just a few weeks ago, it seemed like they were gashing Minnesota up the middle. I know the yards per carry weren't great for Lacy, but between him and Starks combined, just a great day on the ground. But
yeah, they did.
You're saying it might not be the case this week.
Well, the Vikings are going to try not to allow it, certainly. They're going to die by the pass if they have to, and they very well might, considering what the secondary we'll get to in a second. Kevin Williams is okay. The three technique, he's a veteran. He's still playing pretty good. You got a rookie, Sharif Floyd, and you got Everson Griffin, who's really a good inside pass rusher. He's Mike Daniels-ish. He's even more athletic than Daniels. He's not as strong, but so they got ability to pressure with four guys. Linebacker Chad Greenway's not really what he was, according to scouts. Aaron Henderson's just a guy. Marvin Mitchell's not even a guy. The linebackers are struggling.
I hope one day you don't just say, "Yeah, Tyler, just a guy."
Tyler, the way you were writing, we're going to get to that Tolzien story. No, you're no guy. All right.
That's just a great expression. It is just a guy.
So if you're taking notes in a scout stock, and you just write JAG.
Do you ever write that?
Sure.
JAG.
Point of attack, POA. You go with it, right? Change of direction, COD. All right, secondary, Josh Robinson, the nominal number one cornerback. He's out with a cracked sternum. All right, so we got Chris Cook, long and lanky, not bad on stuff in front of him, not real good at the ball and behind. They've been terrible in the secondary. You got Xavier Rhodes. He's been a disappointing rookie. He got burned again the other day by Seattle. He's had a real disappointing year. Little Marcus Sherrills, he's a competitive. He becomes the nickelback now. Safeties, they're missing Harrison Smith a tremendous amount. He's their best DB. He's still out. You got two guys who will hit, Jamarcus Sanford and Andrew Sendejo. They will collide with you and hit you. They're both tough. You know, they're better than the corners. The corners, the safeties are better than the corners. The corners is the problem, so it's going to be bombs away. So
Air Tolzien.
Cordell Patterson, he's unbelievable on kickoffs. They got to do something with him. Crosby or Maste. Walsh is okay. Walsh is a good kicker. Locke's average punter. They're going to try to win it on special teams with the pass rush. And I don't know what they win it with on offense.
You probably see the same thing as you did last week if you're Green Bay. Right, I mean, they saw what Scott Tolzien did on those play-action passes, but you have to expect the Vikings to sell out against the run again.
They got killed last time, didn't they? They have to. Yeah. I guess that's your Minnesota Vikings, 2-8.
Boy, what? It's just, I know they probably overachieved last year, but I didn't expect them to be this bad this year. Take such a step back. I mean, they're in full-fledged rebuilding again.
So what's killed them? You know, Desmond Bishop would have been a good starter. He's a lot better player than Mitchell, but that didn't kill him. Quarterback again?
Well, I don't know. We haven't really talked about Desmond Bishop. Does he play another down in the NFL? Does he return? Does he play in this league?
I think so. Yeah.
I agree.
They've had both tackles, Khalil and Loadhold, had bad years compared to last year. That's hurt him. Jared Allen's got a little old. They stayed with Aaron Henderson at middle linebacker, and he's not very good. And the cornerbacks, none of them have come through. I mean, Rhodes does not look like a good pick. Chris Cook was a second-round pick. He's not very good. Josh Robinson was a two. They drafted poorly at corner. It's killing them. That's their worst position. It's the way it goes.
It's a game the Packers should win.
Yep. What's the spread? It's by 5. Green Bay's 0-3 against the spread now in these last three games, in addition to 0-3 on the scoreboard. They ready to make a heroic effort in this one?
Well, we'll see. And the guy that it might come down to, Scott Tolzien. Let's talk a little about Scott Tolzien. What stands out to you with his game first?
Poise and toughness. Now, you know a lot more about him than I do. You did this long story late last week, and it ran Saturday. It was a great one. Tyler, you really get into these people. You do a great job talking a lot of people about these guys. You're a masterful interviewer. You really are. So tell us what you learned about Tolzien.
Oh, thanks a lot, Bob.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. Well, I think that he's a guy who will be able to handle the pressure of this all as a young quarterback because of, A, his demeanor, his approach to it all. I mean, everybody you talk to, family members, teammates, coaches, anybody who's been around this guy says the same thing, that it doesn't matter if he's up by 20, if he's down by 20, if things are going great, if things are going crappy, that he's just got the same exact personality through everything. So I think that, above all, has substance to it. You hear that a lot with quarterbacks. Another thing that you hear a lot about quarterbacks is that they put in a lot of hours. They pour themselves into it. But again, it seems like that's the case here, and that's something he absolutely has to do if he's going to excel as a practice squad quarterback. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody by now probably knows how he works with Ben McAdoo before the game's on the field, and they simulate plays and situations and defenses, just the two of them on the field. You know, he's throwing to practice squad guys. So did all that, slept at the 49ers facility for 2 weeks to learn their offense when he first signed with them. You know, in really illuminating all that is kind of the work he did with Rob Johnson, back quarterback with the Bills back in the day. I remember watching him as a kid and that whole quarterback controversy. And side note, I mean, he went through a lot of stuff there that people don't realize. I mean, he had Tommy John surgery years later. He said he actually played through it in Buffalo, but he didn't want to come off the field because Flutie's breathing down his neck. Plays through that, broke his collarbone really bad. He says it looks like a coat hanger today. Just a mess physically. But he teaches quarterbacks with his dad out west. Nobody really knows about their school, their program. He kind of joked, yeah, ESPN stole our idea. But he's worked with all kinds of quarterbacks. Mark Sanchez, Matt Shaw, Blaine Gabbert, just a ton of guys, a lot of high picks. He said that Scott Tolzien, if not the hardest working, was one of the hardest working quarterbacks he ever had there. And that he just was very committed. As we said earlier, there might be a couple bad balls out there. That was it. He goes, he kind of called him a worrier. Not really paranoid, but he worries about everything. He wants to be perfect. And the other aspect of Scott Tolzien is he's got a brother in Afghanistan. He's an Air Force pilot. His plane's been shot at. Nothing too severe, too dangerous. I talked to his brother, who's stationed in England right now, on the phone, who was, I mean, nice enough to talk to me. And total time difference overseas like that. But yeah, he's got that perspective of having a brother over there who's in war, who's had friends that have died, guys he went to school with have died. Part of his job is transporting bodies from one place to the next from war. I mean, such real, raw stories that I never hear of in my life. I don't know if you hear about in your life.
No, sir.
Here in the States, we just take so much for granted. So let's talk to Scott Tolzien about that too. And boy, that has such a big impact on him. That look, he understands the sun is going to rise the day after a bad game. He's got that perspective. And I think that definitely helps his cause now too. And by and large, I mean, it's pretty wild. I mean, God, back in training camp, I mean, we're looking at Graham Harrell, B.J. Coleman, Vince Young as all the backup quarterbacks. Those were our stories all summer. None of them work out. They get Seneca Wallace at the last minute. They get Scott Tolzien at the last minute. I remember talking to Scott Tolzien's locker and like, do you feel like you're just here this week to kind of help him with the 49ers game plan? I mean, that's – and he didn't know. He said, I hope not. Here he is in position to save their season. He hopes. I mean, he has to be their savior to an extent. I mean, they're going to need him this week, probably beyond. Demeanor-wise, personality-wise, I think you have a lot to like about him. On the field, there's a lot to like about him. Now he just has to put the ball in the end zone. That's been his problem. That and turnovers. 5 turnovers in 2 games. Yeah, I believe you. How many footballs did you give quarterback Scott Tolzien? Two and a half
this week. One and a half the week before.
That sounded about right.
Yeah.
This question came up recently. I don't know if it was on the radio with WSSP this morning or what, but is Scott Tolzien getting a pass? Some people think he's getting a pass, that he's a Wisconsin boy. You know, grew up a Packer fan, grew up a Brett Favre fan in a tough situation. Are we all being a little too easy on Scott Tolzien? Am I being too easy on Scott Tolzien, Bob?
Well, when I gave those footballs, I gauge it to what I consider to be the NFL standard, you know. So I felt good about the 1.5 and 2.5. I don't think I'm just giving them any pass, so I would refute that.
I agree. I think you have to look at the context of the situation, too. And where they're at, where he's at, and he's probably given you a lot more than you could have expected. With Mike McCarthy's comments on the deep balls, I think we're going to see a lot more of that against the Vikings, too, in those play-action situations. So, all right, before we run out of time, Bob,
Yep. Let's
get to Twitter, take a few questions. What do you say?
Go for it, Ty.
All right. Okay, I think this one will elicit a very quick response from you, Bob. This from Ed Ronsman. He asks, given the poor safety play, would Charles Woodson have made a difference? The contract hurts, but this team needs takeaways.
There would have been more big plays caused by lack of discipline. No, you don't want him here this year.
I like Ed bringing that up, though, because it's worth, yeah. It is interesting to think about. I mean, if Charles Woodson would have been willing to come back at a much reduced rate, would it be worth having him in this defense? I think that maybe they could have used him as a slot cornerback type of role, but I really don't know. He's older, he's slower, he isn't necessarily playing that great in Oakland, and at safety, he just can't take those risks that he takes at his old position.
He can't tackle anymore either, Ty. Put on an Oakland tape.
Can't tackle?
Nope.
All right. You got to do that in this league, don't you? Okay, this one from Brian Flannery. He asks, what happens to backup quarterback when Aaron Rodgers returns? Tolzien or Flynn as the backup?
You're on that QB detail, Ty. What do you say?
I think they're all in with Scott Tolzien right now. They want to keep a guy that they've developed, they've worked a lot with to this point. I think that Matt Flynn was signed because, look, going into that last game, Seneca Walsh, you don't know if he can really move on that groin. You need a backup quarterback in general. It's a very easy transaction to make to put him on IR and then to sign a guy you're familiar with. So I never really bought into the Matt Flynn fever that so many people seem to be catching here. I don't think we see him on the field unless Scott Tolzien absolutely face plants Sunday. Yeah. Okay. John Decker, he asks, if the Packers drop out of playoff contention before Rodgers is back, do they put him on injured reserve and call it a year?
I think he would fight that, don't you?
I do too. That's the vibe you get from him, from what he said.
Personally to me, I love victories, Ty.
You do.
Victories are everything. That's the way it is, man, in pro sports. Everyone counts. I don't care what the record is or what the situation, that victory counts. All those fans out there, they all want to feel good on Monday morning. Victory is everything.
So this is why you're an NBA fan. When a third of the league is tanking for Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker, you just don't like that?
No.
Have you seen Jabari Parker play?
No.
Do you know who Jabari Parker is?
No.
You will soon. He's okay. Going to be a stud.
Wow.
We got the NBA on in the background, by the way, folks. This is Bucks post game. Did you catch any of that in your peripheral vision, Bob?
The Bucks, huh?
They're struggling.
I heard Dennis Krause on the drive up here with Ted Davis.
Dennis Krause, by the way, the best in the business.
And Ted Davis is pretty darn good.
And too. Ted, all right. And Ted like Davis is great. I say Dennis because that's somebody we get to see on a regular basis up here covering the Packers as well.
Dennis great. Is the ultimate professional, isn't he, Ty?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's get to one more here, Bob. All right. From Jeff Nelson, our buddy Jeff NC1, he asks, will Coach Mike McCarthy allow Scott Tolzien to throw the deep ball more often, as it seems to be one of his strengths? I think we see the deep ball more often, the play action more often. Maybe the question is, do they open it up a little bit? Do they spread it out a little more? Do they open up the playbook? In what ways would they open up the playbook?
Is he capable of no huddle? Tom Silverstein, our colleague, addressed that. I don't really think he is right now.
Probably not right now. One other point to remember, too, is Aaron Rodgers was really good at getting this team into good run plays. And that was one of his strengths here early in the season. TJ Lane kind of said in so many words that Scott Tolzien isn't really doing that, can't really do it as a young quarterback, recognizing audible in some of those run plays. And that's been kind of a factor in some of the struggles there as well. All right, well, let's get to one more. Nick Cobb asks, does it appear there is a chance for the defense to return?
Well, they've been absent without leave now for 3 weeks. So I would, there's 40% of the season left. So I would think there's very good reason that they should return with a vengeance. Clay Matthews is going to get better, right? And start playing some football in this final 37%, I guess it is. I don't know. Yeah.
One player that's going to be the key to the defense, I think, this week, the more they face these good slot receivers, especially if Greg Jennings plays, Micah Hyde. They're going to keep him in the slot. They need Tremont Williams out wide. If Sam Shields is hurt, Hyde's got a rebound this week.
Is Shields going to be out again, do you think?
Didn't practice today with the hamstring injury, and Mike McCarthy said he's kind of in that rehab phase. So, you know, I don't know when people are listening to this, but right now, it doesn't look very promising.
My Christian Ponder could pick that secondary apart, couldn't he?
Should we end on that note? Let's end on that note.
Let's mention the schedule for a future podcast.
That's right.
Right. So we have a short week next week, ladies and gentlemen, and we are not going to have a podcast next week. We have a brutal week, and then we have a very full weekend with our Thanksgiving on Saturday and a baptism on Sunday. So in my family, so we'll come at you before that big Atlanta game.
Why don't we do it live from the baptism? Is that shunned upon you?
I don't think they'd like that.
You don't think they'd like that?
I'd get in some trouble there.
All right, yeah. I'll start
going. So before the Atlanta, we'll preview that one, right?
There we go. That's all right. One. All right, well, hey, thanks a lot for listening, everybody.
Take care. I got a little bit of hope, like a soap on a rope, sweeter than sour, getting thinner by the hour, falling fast, and I'm running out of gas, mugging on your sister, smart as Bobby Fischer, still I couldn't get arrested, though I got more hooks than Madonna got looks, just like that AC/DC song.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here, right now.